We now begin the 16th chapter of Shabbos. As I said in the previous Mishnah, from here on out, we're basically discussing various Dinei Derabbanan, rabbinic enactments to protect Shabbos. And here in the 16th parak, we'll focus primarily on the rules governing saving articles that are in a burning home. So normally one could save various things based on the usual rules of Shabbos. But the rabbis were concerned that if a house were on fire and a person's panicking to save everything, he may, without thinking, come to extinguish the fire. Now, extinguishing a fire is the malach of mechabe, extinguishing, which, of course, is forbidden. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's a malach shen shich legufa. You don't actually want to make something by extinguishing it. So we're talking about a derabbanan. According to Rabbi Yehuda, via doraisa, because he holds that a malach shen shich legufa, you'll recall, since you're extinguishing on purpose, intentionally, and it's forbidden, that alone makes it doraisa level. Doesn't matter that you don't want the fire out per se for its own constructive purposes. Whatever the case is, the Mishnah now is teaching that the rabbis put certain restrictions on what one may save from the burning building. And in so doing, that will make sure that a person's mindful of the fact that he cannot extinguish the fire. So the Mishnah will begin by saying, Kol Kisvei Kodesh, all various scrolls that are Kodesh, meaning Tanakh scrolls, so that includes Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. The Kol comes to add the Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Matzilon Osan, Mipnei HaDaleika, you're allowed to remove them from the building that's now caught on fire on Shabbos. You're going to see later on that many other things are restricted, but there's no restriction on saving these Kisvei Kodesh. One can take them out, and in fact, one can take them out even into a chatzer, the courtyard in front of the building that doesn't have an air of chatzeros. Usually the rule is that if you want to transfer from a private domain to a domain that's not owned privately by the same person who owns the original source domain, so then an air of chatzeros is required. That is, you have to get some bread that will be used as like some sort of communal bread that will connect the different domains. That's true midrabbanan, but we're waiving that here because of we want to protect the Kisvei Kodesh. That's true, says the Mishnah. Bein shekorin behen, uvein she'ein korin behen. That's true whether these are scrolls of Tanakh that are read from, or if they're ones that are not read from. Meaning, of course, the Torah one reads from on a weekly basis. As for the Navi, the Nevi'im, people do read for them all throughout the course of the year with the Haftorah. But the Ksuvim, so those aren't read by the community in any formal time. And as we'll see in the Mishnah shortly, there is a restriction, a rabbinic restriction in the time of the Mishnah, of reading from Ksuvim, those books of Nach, on Shabbos morning when there's the formal shir being given. And we'll see that more in a minute. So the point is people may never read these because there's actually a restriction on reading them during at least part of Shabbos. Nevertheless, one could save these scrolls of Tanakh from the fire. Now that only applies if we're talking about scrolls that are written in good old-fashioned Hebrew, Ksav Ashuris, like a regular, meaning that then the script that you and I know when you see, look inside a Torah scroll, that's the kind of scroll we're talking about. But as the Mishnah is going to say, implicitly, but the words aren't even there, let's say you have like a living Torah, Arya Kaplan's living Torah, which has, let's say, just the translation in English with no Hebrew words. So such a book would not be eligible to transfer away from the fire into a chatzer that doesn't have an air of chatzeros. And therefore the Mishnah says, V'af al pi sheksuvim b'chol lashon, as for those kinds of books or scrolls that might be written in any other language, meaning a language other than Hebrew, te'unin geniza, they, while they cannot be saved from the fire, they must still be nignas, they must still be concealed, meaning modern day, we buried them, but in the time of the Mishnah, they would sort of set them aside in like a Geniza room, specially dedicated to protect these things from disrespect. So the point is, nothing to do with fire here. In general, you have to protect all translations of Tanakh from being disrespected and put them in Geniza. Now, the Mishnah says, "Mipnei ma ein korin behen." How come you wouldn't be allowed to read, or people wouldn't be reading from the Ksuvim? The answer is mipnei bittel beis hamedrash, because we're concerned about the neglect of the proper studies in the beis hamedrash. This is talking about something very specific. in the time of the Mishnah, there was the primary time that people learned was on Shabbos morning, before they went home for lunch. There would be a shiur given, and they'd be taught the basic halachas, and people would learn, you know, Misr and Musar, Hisorus, and so on. So this was very important, and Chazal were concerned that if people were busy reading from Ksuvim, they'd be distracted from paying attention to the shiur, which is their central learning of the week, and therefore they'd miss out on all important things. And therefore the rabbi said, on Shabbos morning, prior to when the shiur is going on, prior to going home and having lunch and coming back, if you want to, you may not learn Ksuvim. You'll remember from Maseches Yoma, we haven't gotten there yet in our Seder here, but you'll recall from other times perhaps, that if the Kohen Gadol was going to fall asleep, what was the tactic to keep him awake on the night before Yom Kippur day? It was to read him from the various books of Ksuvim, Daniel, Ezra, etc. So those are looked at as the most like engaging and fascinating of the books of Tanakh, and indeed they are very engaging, and the concern was that it'd be so engaging that people would come to not pay attention and go to the central shir about basic halacha and musar and hashkafa, that it was even more important in the eyes of the rabbis, and therefore they forbade people from learning ksuvim on Shabbos morning when that was going on. Mishnah says further, matzilin tik ha-sefer im ha-sefer. If you have your sefer, meaning your Torah scroll, let's say inside like a larger mantle or something, a container, so you could save the whole container with the Torah in it. You don't have to sort of remove the Torah from its bag, whatever the case may be. Same goes with v'tik ha-tefillin im ha-tefillin. Same goes with tefillin. Remember, tefillin, of course, have the inside the cloth written on the parchment. You have various verses, so they, of course, need to be saved from the fire. They're also a darbash b'kedusha, and we're saying here that aside from saving the tefillin themselves, if the tefillin are inside some sort of case, bag, etc., you could save the whole bag or case with the tefillin inside of it. You don't have to stop to take the tefillin out of the bag, etc., because you see, again, remember that we're restricting what you can take out of the burning building. But we're not going to force you to start unwrapping the Sefer Torah or, you know, extricating out the tefillin, lest that, of course, waste time when there's a fire going on. So we're saying, no problem. That's even true if you have money inside of, let's say, the tefillin bag. So let's say you've got, you know, your stack $100 bills in the tefillin bag. Even then, you could transfer the whole bag to the chatzer outside, even if it's not with an air of chatzeros. You might think there's a mukta problem. No, there's no mukta problem. In this case, you might think there's an issue of, you know, you're essentially taking the money to where it's not allowed to be, meaning there's no air of chatzeros, mid or abundance forbids taking it to the chatzer. Now we're letting that happen. You might think it looks bad because we had restricted what you can save for yourself, as you'll see as the parak continues on. Nevertheless, we're letting you do it. All this is for the sake of saving the tefillin or the Sefer Torah. Ulehechen matzilin asan. Now, where may one take these Sefer Torah and tefillin, etc., meaning how much of a abrogation of the derabbanans of Hotzah, how far does it go? So we said it goes for sure to include a chatzer, a courtyard that doesn't have an air of chatzeros. But more than that, here the Mishnah says, "L'mavui she'enu mufulash." You can even take it out to a mavui, that is an alley, that isn't like a thoroughfare, a throughway alley. What's going on over here is, in the time of the Mishnah, I think it's familiar to people, their houses were built around a chatzer, a courtyard, and different courtyards opened up into an alley, and then the alleys all led to a main street, a boulevard, the Rosh Hashanah. So the alleys are restricted. They need to have their own eruvin, and also something that demarks the fact that people could see that this is just a mavui, an alley, and not a proper shusarab. That requires, first of all, that it's closed off on three sides, for starters. On the fourth side, which opens up to the shusarab, so that now makes this a restricted place to carry, unless you put up some demarcation on the far side that opens into the shusarab. So this sheet of the Tana here holds that you need to have what's called a lehi, which is like a post on either side, meaning on both sides of the mavui, the alleyway that opens the Rosh Hashanah. By the Rosh Hashanah, you have to have a lechi, this post on either side, on both sides, to indicate to people that this is, you know, to remind them, this is not actually Rosh Hashanah, technically Midoraisa, it's Rosh Hashanah, and we're marking it off as such. So here, we're being lenient in this sheet that holds, even if you just put the lechi on one side, this is not shown in the words of the Mishnah, but the Pshat of the Mishnah is, even if you have lechi just on one side, yes, you can carry, says this Tana, into the mavui. Since really midoraisa to shuziyachid, and there is at least one lechi there, that's sufficient. But you can't have it. It's enum fulash, not totally open, meaning there is at least some lechi demarking the fact that this is not part of the rishus rabbah. Ben Besera is more lenient yet, and he says af lemufulash, even if you have an alleyway that's open, meaning it's open to the fourth side, meaning there's no lechi whatsoever, since it's closed on the other three sides, then really midoraisa, it's rishus hayachid, and therefore we're letting you transfer your sefer Torah from the burning building into the mavui, even if there's no lechi whatsoever, says Ben Besera. The halacha does not follow him, so one could save the sefer Torah into the mavui that has at least one lechi, says Tanakama, that would be the din, and certainly to a Erev that doesn't have an Erev Chatzeros, you could do that also. But meaning, you may not break Shabbos to save a Sefer Torah. So if the exit from the burning building, which is Rishus Yachid, the exit opens up into a proper Rishus Harab Midoraisa, you would not be allowed to transfer from the Rishus Yachid to Rishus Harab. That's, of course, an Isra Doraisa of Hotza. You're not allowed to do that even to save a Sefer Torah, only permitted to do that in case of saving a life. And therefore, you just have to let the building burn down, God forbid. So the point of permission is, while the Doraisas, of course, are not abrogated, we're being lenient to some degree with the Durabanans of Hotza into rabbinically restricted areas, meaning not a problem with the Chatzer, and the Machlokas here about the Mavli. Shabbos Perek Tezayin, Mishnah Base, 16.2. We continue to discuss the restrictions on saving possessions from a burning building. In the previous mission, we said you could save Sifrei Torah and Tefillin, and you could bring them even to a place which one normally cannot transfer into, meaning a chatzer that has not got an Eruv. This mission will talk about transferring and saving food from the burning house. So we're talking about on Shabbos, and the mission says, Matzilin mazon shalosh seudos. You're allowed to save food that is for three meals. Again, the reason why we're restricting saving things on Shabbos is because people might panic and come to extinguish the fire. And by putting restrictions on what can be saved, they'll be mindful of the Shabbos restrictions, and that will include not putting out the fire. So we're saying here you can save three meals worth of food. This actually is the source in the Mishnah for the obligation to have three meals on Shabbos. The Gemara darshens it from a pasuk. That is a pasuk that mentions the word hayom three times, and that word yom three times in one pasuk comes to tell you the three meals is the pasuk about food eating on Shabbos. So, but that might be only derabanan, machlokas derais derabanan from the pasuk. Here's the source in the Mishnah for it. And the point here is that since you need to eat your meals on Shabbos, we're letting you save three meals worth. Haroi la'adam la'adam. You can save food for human beings for human beings. Haroi la'behema la'behema. And you also can save food for your animals. The reason for this is because there's a separate restriction on a person eating his Shabbos meal prior to feeding his animals, and therefore one needs to save food also for his animals so that he can have animal fodder to feed them, to give them before he eats. Now, it's not as simple as I just made it sound. Ketzah, the Mishnah says, how is this going to work out? Nafla deleika b'leile Shabbos. If the fire broke out on Friday evening before having eaten even your Friday night meal, which means you have three meals to go. That being the case, matzilin mazon shalosh sudas, you're allowed to save three meals worth of food. But b'shachris, if the fire breaks out in the morning, after a person ate his dinner the previous night, there are only two more meals on Shabbos to go. And that being the case, matzilin mazon shtei sudas, you're only allowed to save two meals worth of food. But mincha, if it comes out in the afternoon, prior to the third meal, then mazon shtura achas, you're only allowed to save just food for one meal, and also drink as sufficient for the Shabbos also. So the idea being that we're actually saving this food all just for Shabbos, for consuming it as is required for Shabbos meals. Rabbi Yossi is going to disagree. He's more lenient. Rabbi Yossi omer la'olam matzilin mazon shalosh sodas. You're always allowed to save three meals worth of food, even if you've already eaten some meals. His thinking is that anyways, by restricting it to just three meals worth, you're going to be mindful of their restrictions. You won't come to extinguish the fire. It's a lot simpler and straightforward that way, and therefore there's no reason why not to do it. And remember, anyways, we're only saving this food by transferring it from the private home, whatever it is, into a chatzer that has already an Erev Chatzeros. We're not allowing you to be Mechal Shabbos, save the food, even Midurabanan, saving of transference, save the food, even by violating a Midurabanan. So since Rabbi Yossi holds, anyways, you're not doing anything wrong by transferring the food it's just a matter of the rabbis making a restriction so you'll be mindful not to extinguish the fire. So saying three meals worth is sufficient. The halach, however, does not follow Rabbi Yossi. Halach is like Tana Kama. The one can only save the number of the amount of food that he would use for the remaining meals of that Shabbos. Shabbos, Perek Tezayin, Mishnah Gimel, 16:3. The Mishnah continues to discuss limitations on saving things from burning home on Shabbos. The previous Mishnah had said that you're limited to the food that you would need for the three meals you have on Shabbos. And if you had lalach only two meals to go, then you only could bring two meals worth of food out. Here the Mishnah modifies that by saying, Matzilin sal male kikaros. You're allowed to save one basket that's full of loaves of bread. Vafal pishe yeshbo meyasudos. Even if that basket contains bread for 100 meals, you could save that one basket because even though now you're taking out more than food for three meals, but actually the amount of work is less, and therefore there's even less concern about you tearing inside the fire, burning building, putting things the fire out, etc. You'll just take one thing and go. And the same applies, the eagle shell tevela. In the time of the Mishnah, they had these, they would press dried figs into sort of like a round mold and make what's called an igul, which means like a circle of pressed figs. So the point is this could be quite large, and even if you have enough figs pressed to serve you for many meals, you could take that one single unit out of the house that's on fire. And similarly, v'chavis shel yayin, you could take a whole barrel of wine out, even though there's plenty of wine for many more than three seudos. V'omer l'achirim, now beyond what you're allowed to take, you're limited, but you could announce to your neighbors, ba'u v'hatzil lachem, come and save food for yourselves. This is an invitation to other people to take food out also. This is tantamount to being mafkir his food, which means he's saying the food is no longer his, and therefore other people can come take it, and they can really keep it for themselves. They'll be limited, like he's limited, to three meals worth of food, each according to their own person, and similarly, they would be allowed to take a single basket of bread or igul shel tevela, keg of wine, etc. In all these cases, fine. Now, v'mahayu pikchin, now if the people, the neighbors who come to take this food out are people who are familiar with Hilchos Shabbos, and they're clever people. Osin imo cheshbon achar Shabbos. They would make some sort of calculus. They'll come to a tally with the owner of this, the previous owner of the food, after he was mafkret, it no longer is his, but he can now have the food returned to him. And the people who saved his food can say, "Listen, you should pay us for the time. Pay us for our time for saving your food." So that means they're actually getting paid for work they did on Shabbos. Now, normally the din is one may not pay someone else, Jew or otherwise, for doing work on Shabbos. The way it's done, I don't want to get into this minute here, but the way, and actually we'll have another parak about Mir La'akam shortly in the next parak. But the way it's done basically is that you don't pay a person for work done on Shabbos, even we're talking about permitted work that you could do on Shabbos. You can't pay for it for work done on Shabbos. So typically what's happened is by Havla, there's a payment that's made that includes the work that would cover the work that was done before Shabbos or after Shabbos, like setup and cleanup. Anyways, the point is, since these people were actually rescuing the food for their own benefit because the food was hafker, ownerless, so that means that they are not doing any work for Shabbos, and therefore to sort of return this food to the original owner and charge the original owner for their time would be within bounds. It's not a violation of the Isra Darabanan of being paid for work on Shabbos. These are good guys. In other words, as the Barthener speaks out, these are Yirei Shemayim, and the point is they don't want to exploit the victim of this fire, and therefore they don't want to keep the food for themselves. They want to return the food, but at least they want to get paid for their time for having lost their Shabbos arrest to do work in saving the food. Now, if they were actually chassidim, meaning they'd go beyond the letter of the law, then of course they would just return the food back to the original owner and not charge him anything at all. That of course would also clear them entirely of taking money for work that was done on Shabbos, even if it's done in a mutter way. In any case, the Mishnah says that's not Mikra Din. Mikra Din, the letter of the law is they could charge for their time. And that's the point here again. Ve'im hayu pikchem, if they were sophisticated and understood Hilchos Shabbos like you do now, osin imo cheshbon achar Shabbos, they, the ones who rescue the food, could make a deal, a calculation with the original owner of the food. Now, leheichan matzilan osan, to where may they, that's both the original owner and the rescuers, transport this food to? Lechatzer ha-ma'orevis, only to a courtyard that already has an eruv. That is to say, in other words, there's no leniency being applied here in terms of the halachas of hotzah. Anywhere when one could carry or transfer the food, that would be allowed to transfer the food in the quantities stipulated by the Mishnayos. But any place that doesn't have an existing eruv, even meaning a courtyard, which is walled on all four sides, and therefore Rosh Hashanah Yachid altogether. But the rabbi said you can't transfer from your private home into that eruv without first paying the eruv chatzeros. So then one would not be allowed to save any food from the private house into that chatzer. So the Mishnah is saying here, only where it would be permitted to carry anything under normal circumstances, so too they can carry the food into there. And not more than that. In contrast, you'll recall in the first Mishnah of the Perek, we said when it comes to saving a Sefer Torah or Tefillin, you can take it not only to an Erev that isn't Mo'revis, but even into a alleyway, which doesn't have walls on all four sides, as long as it has perhaps one lechi or even no lechis, according to Ben Becerra. Here Ben Becerra is lenient again, and here he says Ben Becerra Omer, af l'she'enem o'revis. He says it's not necessary that the chatzer that we're transferring the food into has an eruv, since anyways, really, Midoraisa has no problem in the world with transferring food from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. Here he'll be lenient and allow the people to save the food and bring it into the chatzer, even if there's no eruv beforehand. Again, don't forget the eruv means the food, the bread that unites the private owner with the other people who have access to this chatzer, this courtyard. So Ben Becerra holds that's not essential, and we're being lenient when it comes to saving food as well, and you could transfer the food from the home into the eruv into the chatzer without an eruv. But the halacha again is like the Tana Kama, meaning there are no leniencies allowed whatsoever for saving food from a burning building on Shabbos. Shabbos Perek Tes Zayin Mishnah Dalet 16:4. In the previous Mishnah, we had ended up by discussing the rules regarding saving food from a burning home. And the end of the discussion there was whether there is a leniency regarding the requirement to have an Eruv and a Chatzer to carry the food out of that home. The Tana Kama said there's no leniency, therefore it must be a Chatzer Morevis, a courtyard that has an Eruv Chatzer set up from beforehand, if you're going to carry the food out there. And Ben Becerra was lenient and said, even if it's an animal revis, even if there was no Erev Chatzera set up there from before, it's okay, we're going to relax the requirements, this rabbinic requirement of Erev Chatzeros, for the sake of saving this food on Shabbos. So our Mishnah here picks up where that Mishnah left off, and we say the very same machlokas regarding whether one relaxes the requirements of the Erev and the Chatzera or not, applies also to saving one's utensils from his home, both utensils for eating as well as clothing. So the Mishnah starts out by saying, Ulisham, and to that same place, meaning according to Tana Kama from the previous Mishnah, to a chatzer that has an Erev, and according to Ben Becerra, even a chatzer without an Erev, Motzi kol klei tashmisho. You can take out all of your utensils that are used for eating. That would mean your cutlery and crockery, your pitchers, cups, whatever you need to make a Shabbos meal. That can be taken out as well. Again, with the requirement of it having the Erev according to Tana Kama and Halacha. And similarly, if you're going to take clothing out, you can take the clothing out, and in truth, you can take it as much as you want, provided that velovesh, you wear that clothing, kol mashiach alilbosh, but you can wear as much clothing as you can fit in your person. So you can put on, you know, three pairs of pants and four jackets and five hats, it's no problem. As long as you're wearing the clothing as opposed to carrying it in your hands as you take it out of the burning home, that's going to be okay because you're clearly evidencing that you are mindful of the restrictions of Shabbos and therefore you are not going to, in your panic, come to extinguish the fire, which was our concern in the previous Mishnah, or carrying the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, etc., the same thing. So you're mindful of Shabbos by having to wear all this clothing. Similarly, not only can you wear what you have to wear, or as much as you want to wear, v'otef kol mash yachol la'atof, you can enwrap yourself in as many things as you can wrap yourself in. So this is referring to the types of garments that one doesn't wear snugly on his body, but rather things like a talis, a shawl, pashmina, scarf, turban, etc. These things which wrap around you, you can wrap them around as many as you want, as long as they're wrapped as you carry them out the house. Rabbi Yossi disagrees. Rabbi Yossi says you can't go and wear five jackets and six hats. That's not allowed. You can wear clothing, but only the amount of clothing which is normal, like the max that would normally be worn at one time. So he will give a specific list of 18 items. The Bartender gives us what these 18 items are.
In fairness, I assume if Rabbi Yossi were alive today, he'd give a different list. It's based on what's normal. And the list doesn't seem very normal to us in the 21st century. But in any case, he says, Rabbi Yossi's Omer, Shmona Sar Kelim. He says you can just wear 18 articles at one time because that's all that one would normally wear on Shabbos. More than that is disallowed. It's successive. So what are those 18? Barthenor lists them. First, you have the Sarbal Elyon, the outer jacket. Second, Malbush Mele Moch, some kind of stuffed jacket that goes beneath that. Chagur Rachav, the third thing is a thick belt that would have, like, not say money attached to it, like a money belt or whatever it is attached, like a belt that wraps around you. Beged Sar V'Katsar, some kind of, like boxer shorts, something like that, like a thin garment that goes beneath. The fifth is the Chaluk, it's kind of like a long shirt, thin, long shirt. Chagur is like a sash that goes around that keeps the shirt closed or tight-fitting. Seventh is the kova, a hat on top of your head. Eight is the mitznefes, that's like a turban that goes around the head. So you'd have like sort of a hat, it's kind of on top of the pate of the head, but then the mitznefet around, like the forehead and around the head. Okay, number 9 and 10 are minalim, those are shoes, one for left, one for right foot. Then 11 and 12 are bate shokayim, socks, again, one for left, one for right, or stockings. 13 and 14 are bate yadayim, gloves for the right and left hand. 15 and 16 are rididim hitnagev, towels, two small towels to dry yourself off, like kerchiefs, I suppose. Quite interesting, I'm not exactly sure, but I assume some kind of handkerchief or something. The 17th is talis katan, a small talis. And number 18 is sudar shibitaro, a scarf that goes around your neck. So that's the max a person would wear at one time, and that's Rabbi Yossi's limit. More than that, not. The halacha is like the Tanakama, which means you can wear as much as you want as long as you're wearing it. So five jackets is fine, not just one jacket, etc. Not one of each, but even five are the same thing. And not only that, but v'chozer v'lovesh u'motzi, you can go in a second time, get dressed a second time in your five jackets and six hats, u'motzi, and take that all outside, back to the chatzer, as long as it's an eruv. And you can do it as many times as you want, and you can invite others to join you. V'omer la'acherim ba'u v'hatilu imi. You can say to others, like in the previous Mishnah, kind of, come and save along with me to help get people to help. Same kind of principles would apply, same kind of rules would apply, and so on, like the previous Mishnah. There is a curious difference between that Mishnah and this one, which is instead of saying Hatzilu lachem, save for yourselves, it's Hatzilu imi, save with me. So why the change in language? An answer given, a suggestion is that when it comes to saving the clothing, everyone's on equal footing. The rules are the same for everybody, as much as you can wear. So imi means with me, because we are equal in terms of the rules of governing what and how we can save and the quantity. In the previous Mishnah, it said lachem, for yourselves, as opposed to imi, because the amount that a person can save, it varies on the person, because we said it's how many meals you have left. You can take as much for the remaining number of meals. So if you have 2 meals left, you could save 2 meals worth. If you have 3 meals left, you could save 3 meals worth. And therefore, there might be a difference in the number of meals worth that a person could save from the homeowner. Therefore, he wouldn't say imi, same as me, but rather lachem, each according to their own limitations. In any case, the halach, like I said, is like the Tanakama here, so you can, as long as you're wearing the clothing, you can take out as many times as you want, inviting people to join you, and as long as there's an air of chatzeris, you can carry it all into the air of without limit, unlike the previous mission, because you're mindful of the halachas of Shabbos by doing it in this unusual way. Shabbos Perek Tes Zayin Mishnah Hey 16:5. We continue to discuss the halachas of what happens if a fire breaks out in one's home. And here we'll talk about protecting things from catching fire. It says, Reb Shimon ben Nanas Omer, Porsin or shel gadi al gabe shida teva u'migdal, she'achaz behen esa'or. One is permitted to spread a hide of a gadi, a baby goat. This is a moist animal hide. And since it's moist, it won't catch fire. It will just sort of singe but not burn, and therefore it could act as a flame retardant. And you would have a mukta problem here normally, but this we're talking about is a case where one designated this hide as a mat to sit on. So one is allowed to spread such a flame retarding hide on top of a piece of wooden furniture. The examples are the classic examples of the teva, so the shida, teva, and migdal. These are different kind of like large wooden storage containers, maybe a box and a chest and a cupboard. Would be fair translations. She'achaz ben esa'or, even if they've already started to catch on fire, we're not actually putting out flames. That would be forbidden to directly extinguish the flames with like a fire blanket, effectively. But to
cover the box in something that's flame retardant so that the fire won't spread and the whole box won't catch a light, is permitted, mibnei shen mecharech, because, and the because here means why this would be effective, the flame retarding skin of the gedi would be effective, because shehu mecharech, it doesn't burn, it only like singes as opposed to burns. Meaning the mipnei here is not coming to address why it's permitted to do so, just why it's effective to do so. We'll discuss why it's permitted in a moment. Va'osin mechitza b'chol ha'kelim. Similarly, you can make a partition using any kinds of utensils. Bein melein, bein reikanin. It doesn't matter what they're made of, or if they're even, you know, like for example, like a metal, you know, you can put like a metal wall or use metal utensils to prevent the spread of the fire. That's permitted, but that's even if it's meleim. Meleim means if they're filled with water. And the idea here being that if you take a container that's full of water and you put it near the fire, that container is liable to burst. And if it bursts, the fire will be extinguished by the water that comes out of the container. And that will be extinguishing. But we're saying even then it's permissible, bein meleim, bein reikanin, whether the container is full or empty of water. You're doing it b'shvil shelo ta'avor hadaleika. You're doing it so that the fire won't spread further. And if you'll ask, wait a second, that's extinguishing if you know full well that the container will burst and put out the fire when the water splashes on it. The answer is that's still permitted, according to this shita, the Tanakhama, because that extinguishing is just a grama. It's an indirect act. And normally the rule is that grama, when one does a malacha by grama, indirectly, so that's Aser Madurabanan. But the point is, and this is the central point of the Mishnah here, essentially, that the Tanakhama holds that you, yes, are permitted to do a malacha through grama if it's to prevent hefsed mamon, to prevent yourself from losing like a financial loss. So the point of the Mishnah is that you can indeed do it because to prevent financial loss because of grama. Now, Rabbi Yossi disagrees. Rabbi Yossi oser b'chli cheres chadashim malei in mayim. Rabbi Yossi says you may not use a fresh, not fully fired earthenware container that's full of water, lefi she'ein yachon lekabel esaor, because it won't be able to endure the heat of the flame, meaning it's certainly going to burst. And v'hen misbaka'in, they'd burst open, u'mechaben esadaleika, and then the water would extinguish the fire. And Rabbi Yossi holds, unlike Tanakhama, that extinguishing even by a grama indirectly, I'm causing it to happen, is forbidden. He doesn't allow for the leniency of for hefsed moment to prevent the loss of money. One could do a grama malacha. Halacha, however, follows the Tanakhama. This is important in a number of halachas. L'maisa, that one indeed halacha may do an act that causes indirectly, meaning grama, for malacha to happen if one is doing it to prevent hefsed moment, a loss of money. Shabbos Perek Tezayin Mishnah Vav 16:6. We continue to discuss the halachas of putting out a fire in Shabbos. Now, we've already established that a Jew may not put out a fire in Shabbos. The question here in our Mishnah is, what happens if someone who's not chayev in Shabbos comes to put out the fire? So we're assuming here that the person, we have two cases, either will be a non-Jew, or it'll be a child, a Jewish child who's not bar bar mitzvah. So in the case of the non-Jew, we're assuming here that the non-Jew is coming to put out the fire to help the Jew. And if that's the case, the general rules of Amir La'akum kick in. We've actually discussed this earlier in the Masechta. I don't want to get back to it too much here. But the basic premise is there's a Isser Durabanan to tell a non-Jew to do a malacha on your behalf if you yourself can't do it. So whatever you can't do, you cannot explicitly instruct a non-Jew to do for you. So that being the case, the Mishnah says, Ovid Kochavim, if a non-Jew, Shaba L'chabot, he comes to extinguish the fire to help the Jew. Again, if it's for the non-Jew's own benefit, because he's the neighbor and doesn't want his house to burn down, then it's a non-starter. But if he's coming for the Jew's benefit, Ein Omrim Lo Kabe, the Jew may not tell the non-Jew, oh, glad the fire department came, please can you put out the fire, there's a fire inside. That you cannot do, because you're instructing the non-Jew to put out the fire. That's a violation of the Isser through a bun of Amir La'akum. But Va'al Techabe, he need not say, don't put out the fire. Again, if you look at the words of the Mishnah by themselves, you won't see that, but that's what's going on over here. We Ein Omrim Lo Kabe, you may not tell him, yes, extinguish it. Va'al Techabe, the missing words are, and he need not tell him, no, please don't put out the fire. rather, the Jew can just remain silent and let the non-Jew put out the fire. Mipnei, because she'ein shvisaso alehen, because there's no requirement for a Jew to ensure that a non-Jew isn't machal Shabbos. Adarabba, the truth is just the opposite. There's actually a non-Jew is not allowed to keep Shabbos. So there's no issue there at all in terms of making sure they keep Shabbos. And the truth is, the halach would be even that a Jew could announce loudly, you know, whoever puts out the fire won't lose. Again, you're not instructing someone to do something explicitly. You're not offering a particular reward. Not making someone your shaliach or agent to do it for you. And therefore, it'd be permitted. We discussed this. I don't want to discuss any more about that. And Mir Lakumna, but that's the point. Now we're going to talk about what happens if the person who comes is not a non-Jew, but rather a Jewish child, who's also not chayv in mitzvahs yet. So aval katan, if a pre-bar bat mitzvah girl or boy comes, shabal l'chabot, and they come to extinguish the fire. Ein shomono, we do not, literally don't listen to him, but it means we don't allow him to put out the fire. The idea here is that he's coming to put out for the father. So it depends. If the child is already old enough for chinuch, to be you know, the education, how to keep Shabbos. So we're talking about a child who's, you know, who's 8, 9, 10, 11. So then it's a non-starter. There is a chiyuv to teach children, Jewish children, and therefore you certainly wouldn't allow them to do a malach of mechaba, of extinguishing the fire. The Mishnah's case here is when the child who's coming here is younger than that. The child is too young to have reached the age of chinuch, so this is a 4 or 5-year-old that's coming, and they're doing it for the sake of pleasing their parent. And they say, oh, you know, you want the fire out? I'll do it for you. So if that is the motivation of the child is really acting on your behalf to put out the fire, again, you don't allow, you're not allowed to have a child, even who's not reaching the age of chinuch, to do a malach on your behalf. So therefore, ein shomono, we don't let him do it. Bibnei sheshvisaso alehen, because there is a requirement for Jews to ensure that children are machal Shabbos. Again, let me clarify. If the child has reached the age of chinuch, is old enough to be educated, so then you have to make sure, because of the general obligation to ensure that they learn how to keep the mitzvahs, they don't do malach on Shabbos. The point is, even if the child is younger than that and hasn't reached the age of chinuch, who's acting on your behalf, you have to ensure that malach isn't done on your behalf, and certainly not by your children, but really even someone else's child, the same thing. You would tell the child not to do it. Okay, now we have one more item to discuss, which is a big picture but important question. Why is one not allowed to tell the non-Jew to extinguish the fire? If you think about it, putting out a fire is a malacha shenatzricha legufa. We know what that means already. You're not creating charcoal or the like. You're simply stopping the problem of the fire spreading. You don't want the fire to be out, you just don't want it to burn your house. So that's malacha shenatzricha legufa. We know there's a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. If it's aser medoraisa medorabanan to do malacha, if it's enatzricha legufa. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's only an iser medorabanan. The Shulchan Aruch paskins, like most Rishonim, like Rabbi Shimon, that a malacha shenatzricha legufa is only an aser medorabanan. And that being the case, putting the fire out is only an iser medorabanan. And the Shulchan Aruch also paskins that in the case of hefsed meruba, a substantial financial loss, one is yes allowed to explicitly instruct a non-Jew to do a malacha, which is only an iser derabanan. So it should come out then that according to the Shulchan Aruch, one should yes be allowed to instruct a non-Jew to put out the fire. So the Mishnah Berurah suggests the reason why the Mishnah is not, according to those Shitas, they would understand that the reason why the Mishnah is not allowing one to explicitly instruct the non-Jew to put out the fire, as our Mishnah said, is because we're concerned that, he suggests perhaps, that the Jew would get involved in the process of extinguishing it and then be over in Israel to himself. So because of the bala, the panic of the fire, etc. So that's a suggestion by Mishnah Berurah. In any case, that's our Mishnah.
Shabbos Perek Tes Zayin, Mishnah Zayin, 16:7. We continue to discuss what one may do to prevent the spread of fire here. We haven't got a fire burning yet, we just have a candle, but we're afraid that the heat from the candle could cause the roof to catch on fire. So it says, Kofen Karish Al Gabi Haner, one may turn over a dish
above covering a lamp with an open flame, bishvil shelo te'achoz bakora, so that the fire shouldn't catch onto the beams of the house or roof itself. Here we're talking about a situation, of course, where you're not extinguishing the flame. That would be forbidden all to itself. We're talking about essentially leaving a gap between the overturned plate and the flame so that air can get in, and the flame will continue to burn. It's just that the plate now will retard the spread of the heat so that the house doesn't catch on fire. Obviously, if we have a risk to life and so on, things fall away, but we're talking about a scenario where it's just a matter of property damage, so we can prevent it. A side point, this dish must be used out of non-metal because there is a concern if one used metal directly over a flame, their metal could glow red hot, which is a problem to itself on Shabbos of like kindling. It's red hot, so we can't do that. Another side point is that there's actually machlokas, if you recall, whether one may move a non-muksa item for the sake of a muksa item. Here the non-muksa item is the plate, the muksa item is the flame. So either the case is that this tana holds not a problem to such a thing, so moving a plate l'chadchila for the sake of fire is not an issue. Alternatively, would be a scenario where, say, for example, he first picked up the plate because he needed the plate for something, or even he needed the place where the plate was. You can move, pick up the plate for that reason. That's heter, that's permissible. And once you have it in your hand, you can put it down wherever it's convenient. And here it's convenient to put it between the flame and the beam so that the fire doesn't spread. Speaking of flipping over a plate, we have va'al tsoa shel katan. You can also flip over, take a dish upside down and cover excrement. Now, the case of the Mishnah here, if you read it at face value, it sounds like it's shel tsoa, the excrement of a child. That wouldn't make so much sense because there's a general leniency when it comes to what's discussing things in the home which disturb one. They have a status of what's referred to as a graf shel rei. Graf shel rei is like a chamber pot. And even though a chamber pot, let's say, is filled with excrement and it would normally be mukta, nevertheless, one is allowed to remove something like that from his home because it bothers him on Shabbos. So that's a special leniency in the halachas of mukta. Which is why, for example, you can take, trash bags that are overflowing in your house, whatever it is, out to the garbage. On Shabbos, that's allowed because, again, the trash bags, if they're bothering you and the garbage is bothering you, you can take it out, even though the garbage is muktza. So if that's the case, so too, if you'd have children excrement in your house, you could just get rid of it directly under that same leniency. So that can't be the case of the Mishnah. The case of the Mishnah must be where we're talking about excrement outdoors, and it's not children making the excrement. It's rather, it's say, like, chickens making the excrement. We're concerned that the children playing out in the yard, where the chickens do their thing, the children will play with the excrement from the chickens and get filthy, etc., and that's no good. And therefore, we are saying, yes, you may take the upside-down plate and cover the excrement of the chickens out in the yard so that the child doesn't get dirty. And that's the point here. Okay. Also, another case of flipping over a bowl or a plate, you've got v'al akrav shlo sishoch. You can use the bowl or plate to cover a scorpion so it doesn't sting you. Yeah. Now, we're not talking about a situation where there's a risk to life, of course, so you could just kill the thing out and out, and you have a mitzvah to do so. In fact, I've been on Shabbos, although killing normally is not allowed on Shabbos. The simplest explanation here of the Mishnah is that our Tana is going like Rabbi Shimon, who holds that a malacha shenetzrich lagufa is only asar medurabanan. And here, by trapping the scorpion, although trapping is tzeda, is one of the lamatas malachas, that's only when you're trying to catch something because you want it. If you're catching something because you don't want it, like the scorpion, now you're in enetzrich lagufa, not the normal use, not the purpose of the malacha, and therefore you're in, according to Reb Shimon, derabanan territory, and derabanans are relaxed if you're preventing injury to people. So we're not talking about risk to life, but injury. So that's our Tana, let's say, goes like Rabbi Shimon, and therefore it's just a rabban, and therefore it's lenient. Now, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, reports what actually boils down to being a Maisa Listor, a story that really happened, but it contradicts what we just said. Maisa ba lifnei Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai ba Arav. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lived for 18 years in this town called Arav in the Galil, and the very Shalik came to him. It was reported to him that Ploni covered a non-lethal scorpion with a plate. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, "Choshashani lo mechatas." I am afraid that he may indeed be liable to bring a chatas, meaning he did an iser d'oraisa. So the simple understanding here would be that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, holds that, like Rabbi Yehuda, that a malacha shena tzricha lagufa is an Isser Torah, and therefore one capturing a scorpion, even if he doesn't want the scorpion, is doing the malacha of tzeda, and since there was no risk to life in the scenario that was presented to Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, so you have a malacha happening on Shabbos, and therefore he did it on purpose, but did know it was Usser, hence you got a shogeg situation, and therefore he'd be chayav achatas. Okay, as I've said a number of times already, most Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch go with Rabbi Shimon, that malacha shein tzricha lagufa is only issa d'rabbanan, but it's actually a bigger machlokas. Shabbos Perek Tezayin Mishnah Ches 16:8, the last of the Perek, and an important Mishnah that discusses the halachas of getting benefit from the work of a non-Jew done on Shabbos. The Mishnah says, Ovid kochavim shehidlik es haner. If you have a Gentile who lights a candle, if he did it for himself, so then mishtamish la'oro, the Yisrael, the Jew, can also get benefit from the light that of the candle that was lit by the non-Jew. The reason is because the Gentile did it for himself, and there's no issue of emir la'akum, no issue of having told him or hinted to him to do something on behalf of the Jew. However, ve'im bishvil Yisrael, if the reason that the Gentile lit the candle was to provide light for the Jew, then asur, then a Jew may not get benefit from it. And the truth is that's for any Jew. No Jew may get benefit from the light then done on Shabbos, because it was done for the benefit of a Jew. Now this is true even if the Jew never asked or even hinted for the Gentile to light the candle. The reason why is because next time he will. Now, if that's the case, and it is, so then you have to ask yourself why this isn't a violation of the general principle that the Chazal don't do a gzeira l'gzeira. They don't do rabbinic enactments to protect rabbinic enactments. Usually the purpose of a gzeira, a protective fence, is to protect a d'oraisa issue, protect the Torah itself. And usually we don't make a fence to protect a fence. So here I'm suggesting it is like a fence to protect a fence, because the din d'rabbanan of prohibiting asking a Gentile to do work for you on Shabbos is lest you come to do it. And now we're saying, don't even get benefit from the Gentiles doing the work for you when you didn't ask, lest you come to ask him, which is only an issur d'rabbanan in its own right. So the answer is, or an answer is, that while it's true that normally we don't do a gezera like gezera, we don't do two levels of protective fencing, that is if there was a protective fence and then the rabbis came another day to add further protection to that fence. However, if at the time that the original gezera was enacted, it's very possible that it could have like multiple, you know, parameters. And that's what happened over here. In other words, the rabbi said, we're afraid Jews will come to do malach on Shabbos, and therefore we say you can't ask Gentiles to do work for you. If it's usher for you, it's usher to ask a Gentile to do it. And part of that gezera at that time was, and even if a Gentile does do benefit for you, I'm doing some malach that would be forbidden for you, you still can't get benefit from it. So that was the single two facets, the composite facets of that one gezera. Okay, so principle is very straightforward then in the Mishnah, which is if the Gentile does it for himself, benefit is permitted. If he does it for the Jew, Jews may not get benefit from it. The Mishnah goes on to say a similar case. Mila mayim lahashkos behemto. Let's say the Gentile filled up a water trough to water his animals. Now the case is that you have a well that's in Erishus Harabim, and the well, being that it's got walls that are 10 tefachim high and it's 4 tefachim across, the water inside the well is inside a Rishus HaYachid. So you're transferring the water from the well to the watering trough that's transferring from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim, good old Hotza, and Asar Midoraisa. So you have a Jew doing malacha, like lighting a candle, but he's doing it for himself to water his own animals. So then if there's leftover water inside the trough, Mashka Achrav Yisrael, the din is a Jew may come afterwards and use that water to water his own animals, like the previous case. V'im Bishvil Yisrael, if however the water was drawn or extra water was drawn for the benefit of a Jew, so then us or then a Jew, no Jew may get benefit from that water. He'd have to wait until after Shabbos, and even then, technically, you have to wait what's called Bechdei Shiyasu, the amount of time it would take to do that malacha. So if it takes, you know, let's say it takes 3 minutes to get water out of a well and fill into the watering trough, the Jew would have to wait till 3 minutes after Shabbos ends before getting any benefit from that water. Now again, you have to ask yourself, these two cases are basically identical. The candle lighting and the water drawing. And therefore the question is, why does the Mishnah bring both cases? And the Gemara answers, because you might have thought if it just taught the candle case, the candles are particularly lenient because, listen, one candle can work for 100 people, so the Gentile gets a benefit off also automatically. Whereas if it just taught the watering case, you would think that's because only one person can drink water once, and therefore that's to the benefit of the Jew to the exclusion of the Gentile. So you might think it's strict there, but it's more lenient in the case of the candle. And either way, the halachas are, like I just said, in both cases, fine. Now we have a third case, which really sets up the exact same kind of setup. Here you have a non-Jew, Asa Oved Kochavim Kevesh Leired Bo. You have a Gentile, as well as Jews, on a ship, and he, on Shabbos, establishes a gangplank to exit from the ship onto the dock. So that would involve the malach of Boneh, and maybe Makab Apatish. So you can't start setting up ramps on Shabbos, but this Gentile did. So Yored Achrav the Yisrael, the Jews on the boat can walk off the gangplank after the Gentile. The reason why is because he obviously did it for himself, and it's really exactly analogous to the previous cases, like the candle, etc. The reason why the Mishnah brings this third case is simply to introduce an actual Ma'asa Rav, something that really happened, because Ma'asa, it really happened, Rabban Gamliel Uzakenim, the Rabban Gamliel and the elders, Shahayu Bam Besfina, they were on a ship, and they came into port, and it was Shabbos, Va'asa Ovid Kochavim Kevesh, Leirid Bo, and a Gentile on the ship established the gangplank, and he went off, V'yardu Vo, Rabban Gamliel Uzakenim, and after he got off, Rabban Gamliel and other rabbis got off the ship as well, using the same gangplank to show that it's permitted to do so. They didn't wait till after Shabbos. Side point, you may ask yourself, normally if a ship comes to dock on Shabbos, it's forbidden to leave the ship because the dock was beyond the tchum, the 2,000 amma limit around which one can walk, which was established when they were on the ship, when it was Banish Masha, so Shabbos came in. But this case of the Mishnah is very probably referring to the same story that happens in Maseches Erevin in the fourth parak, Mishnah Dalet, where we have the story of Rabbi Gamliel, along with three other rabbis, getting off a ship. And they asked him, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Yeshua, Elizabeth Nazaria, asked him, were we in the Tuchum of the city within 2,000 amos of the port when it was Banish Mashas? And Rabbi Gamliel had an astrolabe, some kind of device to measure the distance from shore, and he said we were within 2,000 amos, so therefore we were in the tchum, and therefore yes, we may get off the ship. And that was the case over here. They got off the ship, and the point of the Mishnah here is not about the tchum issue; it's simply about getting benefit from a Gentile's work when the Gentile did it for his own benefit. And we say yes, it's permitted. Again, halach lamaisa, it is permitted, provided that A, you don't ask the Gentile to do it for you, and B, if the Gentile did do it for you even without asking, you must wait, in fact, not just till after Shabbos, but every Jew, not just the ones for whom the Gentile acted for, but every Jew must wait b'chdei sheyasu, the amount of time it takes after Shabbos to get that work done. So again, if it took 10 minutes to set up a gangplank, you have to wait 10 minutes after Shabbos. Important also, side point back on the water filling, which really reflects on these also. We said that if the Gentile filled up the water for himself, you could use it to water animals after he's done with it. The case there is assuming that the Gentile didn't know the Jew. If the Gentile and Jew have a pre-existing relationship, so then the assumption is that the Gentile left over water knowing it was for the benefit of the Jew, and therefore you have to be machmir for that and assume that he did it for the benefit of the Jew. So the case of the Mishnah over there, which would reflect back in other similar cases like the gangplank, etc., is where the Gentile had no relationship with the Jew and therefore he was acting solely out of his own motivation, and whatever's left over for the Jews, like in the case of the water, was just an accident.